Welcome to the KMUD News. I'm your news director, April Lewis, and I'm glad to be with you for this broadcast. In this episode, we have stories on a report regarding the Great Redwood Trail and the future of the Southern Humboldt Community Healthcare District. But first, some local updates and alerts. This is KMUD News. Starting off with quite a bit of road news from today in Southern Humboldt. At approximately 4:50 a.m. this morning, Monday, July 6th, a collision occurred between a Dodge Ram pickup with a trailer and a semi-truck in Richardson Grove. Traffic was slowed for quite a bit of the morning on Highway 101 as crews cleaned up the mess. Occupants of the vehicles are reported as unharmed by the incident. Further up Highway 101, near Phillipsville, a crash occurred at 5:20 a.m. this morning, blocking both southbound lanes for a period of time. Traffic was heavily impacted, and a lane was not open for southbound traffic on Highway 101 for around 40 minutes until 6 a.m. By after 7 a.m., all southbound lanes of Highway 101 near Phillipsville were reported as open. The traffic collision involved a PG&E service vehicle, which struck an embankment. In the Mattole Valley, early today, Monday, July 6th, a very sad and major crash situation as two people died and another sustained significant injury after a vehicle went off the side of the Mattole River Bridge. The call for the car going off the bridge was made to CHP around 2:20 a.m., and the report was for a vehicle collision on the bridge. Petrolia Volunteer Fire Department, CAL FIRE, Southern Humboldt Technical Rescue, Honeydew Fire, CHP, and City Ambulance all assisted with the accident. According to reports, the vehicle was submerged in the Mattole River, with three individuals located in the water. CPR was attempted for around 50 minutes on the two patients who did not survive. There is currently a hazardous materials response in progress due to fuel from the car leaking its way into the river system. We want to thank our incredible emergency responders, including the Petrolia Volunteer Fire Department, who handle significant and heartbreaking emergency situations, providing critical care under extreme duress. Information from the Six Rivers National Forest. Due to dry conditions and increasing fire danger, the Six Rivers National Forest has implemented fire restrictions that are now in effect. These restrictions apply to all of the Six Rivers National Forest and land administered by the Six Rivers National Forest, which includes the Yukonam Ranger District of the Klamath National Forest. Forest visitors may still have a campground within a designated fire-safe site, developed recreation site, and in designated wilderness areas. Restrictions are expected to be lifted on November 16th, conditions permitting. Next is news from Caltrans District 1 in Mendocino County. Starting Tuesday, July 7th, construction crews will begin work on the Hopland ADA project alongside Highway 101 in Mendocino County. Motorists should anticipate up to 10-minute delays from the Feliz Creek Bridge to north of First Street during overnight hours from 8 p.m. to 6 a.m. Sunday through Thursday. Posted speed limits will be reduced to 25 miles per hour during construction, and motorists are asked to drive with caution in the work zone. The project will operate on a continuous schedule, running 24 hours per day from Sunday at 8 p.m. through Friday at 7 p.m. News from Hoopa Wildland Fire. At approximately 12:45 a.m., Hoopa Dispatch received reports of two separate vegetation fires at the beginning of the gorge just outside of Hoopa. The Hoopa Valley Volunteer Fire Department was initially dispatched and responded to the incident. Shortly thereafter, Hoopa Wildland Fire arrived on scene and assumed fire suppression operations. Upon arrival, firefighters discovered that the two fires had burned together, ultimately becoming one unified fire. The fire burned approximately half an acre of heavy brush, poison oak, and leaf litter before being contained by responding personnel. Due to the potential for fire spread and the increased fire activity throughout the valley, the U.S. Forest Service Lower Trinity Ranger District, which had been assigned to the rodeo fire, was redirected to assist with the bluff fire. two U.S. Forest Service engines, and a Forest Service fire prevention representative responded to support suppression efforts and the ongoing investigation. Based on the initial assessment, the fires are believed to be intentionally set and are suspected to be arson. The cause of the incident remains under investigation. And next, our main stories. This is KMOD News. The Great Redwood Trail Agency discusses next steps after receiving $50 million of state funding. Daniel Mintz reports.
With $50 million of funding from the state's Prop 4 bond measure, the Great Redwood Trail Agency is moving forward on a project that it says will clean up an environmental mess and generate $100 million a year in economic benefits. About $48 million of the gain is predicted for Humboldt County. Elaine Hogan, the agency's executive director, outlined the current status of the Great Redwood Trail project and its future steps during a July 1st online presentation to the Community Economic Resilience Consortium. The agency is managing 231 miles of the 307-mile trail project and released a master plan last March. Hogan described the trail as a multi-generational project, but 60 miles of it are already open to the public, including 20 miles in the northern segment, including Humboldt County. She said the trail, which spans from the San Francisco Bay Area to Humboldt Bay, will spur both environmental and economic benefits.
Environmental enhancement is actually built into our enabling legislation, things like restoring fish passage to the rivers. We have over 100 miles of the trail that go along the Russian River and the Eel River. And so a primary part of the project as we're building the trail is to restore fish passage and native vegetation and habitat. So we do that in a variety of ways, many of which are forthcoming because we are just getting going now that we've adopted our master plan. But one of those main ways is through tribal partnerships and partnerships with nonprofit organizations for the restoration component and advisory services, as well as local jurisdictions. So once the trail is complete, it's going to link 29 towns across three counties with trail access and bring economic opportunities to those regions. So looking at the economic revitalization of these small rural communities as a key component of the project.
The master plan includes an economic analysis and breaks down the annual economic gains into categories as explained here.
So this was done in 2023 dollars, estimating a little over $100 million a year in the counties that the trail passes through once it's fully complete. So that's when you really get these economic benefits, is when you're attracting long distance travelers to come and do, you know, longer extents of the trail and have multi-day stays. So most of those economic benefits come from recreation, tourism, and retail. So about 60% of them. About 37% are, you know, these sort of less tangible benefits, but still definitely do have a monetary benefit in terms of reduction of vehicle miles traveled, improving health outcomes when people have access to outdoor spaces, things like that. And so that's been quantified here. And the transportation and emissions benefits. So those are sort of the non-tangible economic benefits. And we do anticipate an increase in annual tax revenue for local regional jurisdictions, mainly in the form of TOT, the transient occupancy tax, and sales tax on goods and services sold.
The trail replaces a former rail line whose remains blight the environment, and Hogan said the trail is basically a cleanup project. So far, the existing northern trail segments have been developed by municipalities, but the agency is now at the point where it has enough funding to take on trail development itself. Development of the trail segment managed by the agency is estimated at $1 billion to $5 billion. During a question and answer session, Greg Foster of the Redwood Region Economic Development Commission, the meeting's host, asked if there's any opposition to the project.
And it seems like pretty broad support for this idea. I mean, is there anyone out there that's really not, you know, there may be some skepticism or some concern, but
sure.
I haven't heard anyone say, you know, this is absolutely the wrong thing to do, but
There are
Maybe
those
there's a
people
few.
out there. I think
Yeah.
it's important to recognize that this is a railroad corridor. So the two things that can happen on this property is a freight train, or we, because we're rail banked, and the federal government has said that we can rail bank from Willits North. Another appropriate use of the corridor is interim use as a walking and biking non-motorized trail. So, you know, you have dilapidated rail corridor that sat there unused for almost 30 years. We could try to bring a train back if people think that's a good idea.
God, please don't.
Or we can clean up the mess and we can get a walking and biking trail and spur
Right.
economic development and restoration. So those are the options on this property.
Much of the agency's 231-mile section of the trail corridor from Willits North is established through a process known as rail banking, where unused rail lines are allowed to be converted to other uses. Rail banking allows reconversion if a rail project emerges in the future. While that has happened on other rail-to-trail projects in the U.S., it's been very rare and has affected portions of trails rather than entire trail corridors. Trail development will proceed segment by segment, with more doable stretches prioritized. In addition to grant allocations like the one from the bond measure, the agency's operations funding is coming from rights-of-ways licensing and leasing revenue. But Hogan said, quote, "Competitive grant funding from multiple sources is going to be and continue to be a larger part of how we fund this project and the agency." For KMUD News, this is Daniel Mintz.
After last week's coverage on HR1 and its impacts on Southern Humboldt Healthcare, we wanted to get clarification on the future of healthcare services and the new hospital project from the Southern Humboldt Community Healthcare District. KMUD News reports. The Southern Humboldt Community Healthcare District, also known as SoHum Health, services a large area comprising most of Southern Humboldt and parts of northern Mendocino County. Last week, reporting by Lauren Schmidt, both with Redheaded Black Belt and on the KMUD News broadcast, touched on the significant impacts of HR1, also known as the, quote, Big Beautiful Bill, on rural healthcare systems and specifically the Southern Humboldt Community Healthcare District and its Gerald Phelps Community Hospital in Garberville. Some of this reporting raised alarms for local residents who are concerned about losing current healthcare services and the future of the hospital, which has to be replaced by 2030 due to seismic requirements set by the state of California. Before getting into the details of this story, and in the interest of journalistic integrity, I'd like to disclose that my spouse currently works for the Southern Humboldt Community Healthcare District. KMUD News spoke with Southern Humboldt Community Healthcare District CEO Matt Rees and SoHum Health Outreach Manager Chelsea Brown via Zoom today, Monday, July 6th. To learn more about the healthcare district's current financial situation and the feasibility of building the necessary new hospital facility. Thank you, Matt, for talking with us today. A lot of this interview is about the story we ran on Friday from Lauren Schmidt and just some clarifications on the future of our healthcare district and the hospital here, and especially in terms of funding. I wanted to start off with kind of a longer version of a quote that was in Lauren's piece last week when you were asked during the press conference with Congressman Huffman to talk a little bit about what HR1 has meant for hospitals and clinics in the North Coast and throughout California. And there was one section where you're talking about our hospital specifically, where you had said, our hospital was built back in 1961. It's at the end of its useful life, needs to be replaced. And we've designed the new hospital as we were preparing our projections for the USDA Rural Development Loan application. They were looking really good. We're right in the middle of that. And then HR1 passed. And as we redid our projections in the fourth and fifth year, it's not looking good. My plans are into the state. I should get approval from the state sometimes in the next 6 months to go forward and build. And I've got to figure out how to make things work in the fourth and fifth years. Some of these programs that are being cut as much as 35%, and we can't sustain that. What I was looking for clarification on is, you know, can you elaborate a little bit on what it means for the fourth and fifth year projections not looking good? What exactly did you mean by that? And are there any programs that are part of our health district or the hospital specifically that are going to be hard to sustain due to these large-scale federal cuts?
So, health is here to stay. We are working on building the hospital. We have not gone away from that plan. When we redid the about that back when HR1 passed, the fourth and fifth year did not show that we would be able to pay the USDA rural development back. Now, since that time, we've been working on a lot of different things, and some of our projections have changed, and some of the cuts are not as bad as we thought they might be. And that we have opened up new services here in the last couple of months, and that we're not cutting back like others. So we just started MRI services a week ago Saturday, and this next Saturday is going to be our second time of doing MRI services. We have other programs that are moving forward. We had to come up with ways where we put up money, the state's money, and draw down the federal money so that we make up a portion of the losses that we're incurring on taking care of Medi-Cal patients. And so we've come up with these creative programs, and the feds know that these are creative programs, and they're paying more than their fair share, and the state's not paying their portion, and so they're cutting those programs. So we're putting together a bill to go to this next legislature that where the state has to, in this pilot program, pay their fair share, and that knocks out these programs where that are being cut 35%.
About the situations of other clinics, other hospital facilities. You mentioned in that presser that there's one other clinic here locally. It's an FQHC, and yesterday, at that time yesterday, they made the announcement they're closing a couple services, and so hospital clinics, everybody is getting hit hard. I of course, through inference, know that we're talking about Roe's Rule in that specific case. So are you saying then for that fourth and fifth year projection to look a lot better than it did, say, the day HR1 passed, you have certain things in progress now, but you also still need some other either legislation or other, grant type things to come through to make those projections look good again?
The projections are looking a lot better. We've gotten some better understanding of what cuts are coming down. We also have some of the cuts are coming on programs where we just had an increase. And so one program, we have a $1 million increase this year. And so that cut's basically gonna take away that $1 million that we gained this year. And we've been really successful in the past with what we had.
Chelsea Brown, Outreach Manager for Soham Health, also clarified how the health district is diversifying its funding sources and how that diversification is not pulling attention away from building the new hospital.
It's almost kind of made it like we're diversifying. So if we have, a cut in one area, we have these other areas that can kind of insulate us a little bit. And the healthcare district has just been really creative in finding ways to maximize reimbursement, taking on some new services and things that it might seem like we're getting away from focus on the new hospital, but they're actually contributing to our financial stability to be able to afford to pay back that USDA loan we need.
We then asked Southern Humboldt Community Healthcare District CEO Matt Rees to clarify how outpatient services bring in additional income for the district.
It sounds like, based on what you're saying, a lot of this, ability to get the funding you need is coming from expanding outpatient services, essentially, if we're going to, simplify the issue. Would you say that's true? The outpatient services bring a little bit more income?
And then there's the $50 billion for rural facilities and that rural providers. I've got a meeting that I'm working with, getting with Redwoods Rural CEO to say, hey, look, you can't just put in as one provider. Let's go together and put in as two providers for some of these funding programs.
Can you clarify the exact relationship or partnership with Redwoods Rural a little bit? Just because I actually haven't heard of that before, and I'm just interested in what either applications you're doing together or even what kind of sharing of resources the two organizations are doing.
So California has been late in getting their applications out for this $50 billion. The applications just came out last week. The first applications just came out last week. And so Seth and I are going to get together and say, okay, now the applications are out. We know what they're funding. What can we participate in together to bring more money into our community?
Soham Health Outreach Manager Chelsea Brown clarified that CEO Matt Rees was mentioning funding from the California Rural Health Transformation Program, which is a state-level implementation of the Federal Rural Health Transformation Program. The program's fund was put into H.R. 1 to ease fears from politicians on both sides of the aisle that the so-called Big Beautiful Bill would decimate rural healthcare systems, and it could potentially provide some relief for Southern Humboldt.
And that's the Rural Health Transformation Program is what the name of that $50 billion fund to support rural hospitals that was part of H.R. 1 is being rolled out through this specific grant process.
We then turned the conversation back to the physical restrictions of the current Gerald Phelps Hospital, which will no longer meet California seismic requirements in 2030, and how close the health district is to breaking ground on a new facility.
I'm curious about, because I know California has requirements now that major hospitals have to withstand a major earthquake by 2030. You know, with the current timings and how things are being built, I mean, ideally, of course, the health district would be, you know, building the new hospital at that point, or possibly, you know, very close to starting that process. What does it look like in terms of after that 2030 date? What kind of exemptions can the current facility get to continue operating despite not meeting those standards? What does it look like in the early 2030s period for the current facility, which will likely still be, I would assume, in use at that point?
Basically, there is a law that was passed a couple of years ago that you had to put a letter in for that district hospitals, basically, certain rural and district hospitals had until 2033 to make the deadline. We didn't turn a letter in. And so we did not get that exemption. So we'll have to go back and say, hey, can you make an exemption for us to turn in a letter so we can have up until 2033 to complete the project? And then in that same bill, they said, if for some reason you cannot financially meet the requirements by 2033, then you'll get another extension. So there are some extensions out there to keep the facility open. But right now we're on the 2030 deadline because that was our plan and we're working fully towards it. And that's still our plan, is to get it done by 2030.
So my two questions off of that would be, you know, what is the exact like financial tipping point for the organization in terms of, okay, we have the funds to start and we'll be able to finish with those funds, you know, and how far are you away from that now? And, you know, and what exactly are you looking to basically add to your coffers in order to get that started? And then the second part I'm curious about, you're essentially saying that, you know, once that process is started, there's pretty good confidence that these extensions get granted, essentially.
I have confidence that the exceptions will get granted and that they don't want to close rural hospitals. They'll make an exception and that. So that's the last thing that the state or the feds want to do is close rural hospitals. That's why I'm saying that there's going to be a change at the federal level on some of these programs, overturning these programs. There's going to be something that happens here in the next year or two. And as far as the other goes, we're working on making sure that we can get the new hospital done.
There's not really a clear like tipping point exactly, since it's going to end up being such kind of like a patchwork of different funding sources. So it'll depend on if we get, you know, this or that grant that we're pursuing. Our governing board is exploring the possibility of doing a general obligation bond to get some local taxpayers to help with some of the costs. And like Matt mentioned, some of these legislation. So depending on kind of what pieces fall into place, then we'll seek kind of adjust the path forward based on that. So it's not a very like clear, exact path forward, I guess I would say at this point. You know, we're thinking about all the possible options.
With massive legislative changes ongoing at the federal and state level, rural healthcare systems are in a rough place. Time will tell if the Southern Humboldt Community Healthcare District strategy of diversified income and services, along with consistent government lobbying, will result in a new hospital being built and long-term financial stability for the district. Reporting for KMUD, I'm April Lewis. That's all for our news broadcast. Thanks for listening. Thanks to our rotation of broadcast engineers, Dennis Marr, Katie Phillips, Biana Federico, Michael McCaskill, Larry Lashley, and Javier Rodriguez. Also thanks to our reporter for this broadcast, Daniel Mintz. KMUD News is now on streaming platforms, including Apple Podcasts and Spotify. You can download our stories and newscasts for offline listening. You can follow us on social media at KMUD News, including Facebook and Instagram. Do you have issues important to you that deserve more attention? Are there stories we're missing or that you're curious about? You can give us a call at 707-923-2605 or send an email to news@kmod.org. Redwood Community Radio Incorporated is funded by Press Forward, the national movement to strengthen communities by reinvigorating local news. Learn more at pressforward.news. Redwood Community Radio acknowledges that its transmitter sites are located on the unceded territory of the Tsingkiyon, Wailaki, Wiat, Wilkut, and Kato people. We honor ancestors past, present, and emerging and acknowledge the ongoing cultural, spiritual, physical connection that these tribes have to the region. I'm April Lewis. Stay tuned in.